Richard's the life and soul of this match singles night. Confident, charming. I can see why he sets some hearts racing, but my eye's on Matt. Shy, super cute and just a little awkward. But that's exactly what I like about him.
Meet other singles at our match events. Join Match Free today. 18 and over. Additional fees and subscriptions apply. See match.com for details.
Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday about noon Mountain Standard Time and bring you our own unique slant on the world of sports. You can subscribe, you can download at iTunes, at Stitcher, you can go over to Podcast Republic, or you can head over to our website and listen to it there, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We put up new articles each week, put up a link to the podcast each week. If you would like to contact the show for any reason, got a question, got a comment, got a suggestion, you can email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Like to hear from our listeners and enjoy some of the emails that we do get. Sometimes we will end up reading those on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. This week, we are going to recap some of the bigger surprises in March Madness. There's been some interesting stories going on in March Madness, a couple of games that we want to talk about, and of course we want to preview the Sweet 16 that is coming up. And you know, it's already been a crazy tournament. There's already been some really interesting scenarios playing out there. Take a look at the Sweet 16. We'll take a look at the Elite Eight just a little bit. I want to talk a little NBA. There's a pretty big game on Saturday that had some implications for the playoffs, and the playoffs are coming really, really quickly. And the NFL owners' meetings are this week in Boca Raton, Florida. I want to talk about some of those rule changes that they are discussing down there. A couple of them are going into place today. They have approved a few of those. And as we always do, you got to stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. You never want to miss the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know where it's going to go. But we've got a couple things there for you that you are going to want to check out. Coming out in the world of sports news today, the New Orleans Saints and Sean Payton have agreed to a 5-year extension through 2020, which is interesting. You know, the extension's worth about $45 million. It's interesting because we were just hearing a year ago that maybe these two were kind of sick of each other. Maybe these two were kind of ready to go their own separate ways. Now they sign an extension. I don't know what changed, but remember that last year toward the end of the season, the Saints were beginning to talk like, well, we need to rebuild. We need to just level everything and completely start over. I don't know what's changed. They still have some issues with their salary cap. They still have some some flaws in their roster. I don't know what's changed, but something has. Maybe we'll find out what that could be soon. Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones made a little bit of news when he says he's not convinced that the data shows there's a connection between football and CTE. He says that, you know, yes, maybe there's something there, but we don't have the knowledge and the background, and scientifically, there's no way in the world you have a relationship relative to anything here, is what Jones says. You know what that sounds like? And I'm just lobbing this out there. Doesn't that kind of sound like someone who suffers from CTE? Jones did play some football back in the day, didn't he? Oh, I know, he was wearing a leather helmet with no face mask. But it kind of sounds like if you're sitting there saying there's no connection whatsoever. I mean, I wonder if he would say there's no connection between like boxing and CTE. Is he that clueless in that too? Jerry Jones, gotta love that guy. Well, I love that guy because he gives me, you know, stuff to talk about. If you're actually a Dallas Cowboys fan, I wouldn't love that guy. Did you see that the Indianapolis Colts are going to retire Peyton Manning's number 18 jersey? And it sounds like they're going to actually put up a statue outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. You might have missed that. That was this past week. Manning did kind of a farewell speech in Indianapolis, discussed his time that he spent there with the Colts. Now, the reason that you may have missed that is because the media was busy jamming another non-story down our throats instead. So you might not have seen that. You might not have seen that they're going to put up a statue, that they're going to retire the jersey, because the media was busy feeding us a different story. The story they fed us was that the Colts had wanted to sign Peyton to a one-day deal, and then that would allow him to retire as an Indianapolis Colt. That didn't happen. So the reports coming out of sports media And I'm not talking about the little ones. I mean, you know, the ESPNs, the CBSs, the NFL networks. These guys were telling us Manning is still bitter over being cut by the Colts, so he rejected them and instead wanted to retire a Bronco. Yes, it's a spectacular story. It might even be a little bit of a titillating story, but it's not exactly how that all went down. Look, I have no idea what Peyton Manning's feelings are about the Colts. I think he likes the organization. I know that he loves the fans back there. I know that he loves the city of Indianapolis. I can probably guess that he thinks Colts owner Jim Irsay is a jerk because, well, Jim Irsay is a jerk. Everyone thinks that. But Peyton Manning didn't, like, spurn anyone. Understand this. As good of a story as that might be, his rights still technically belong to the Denver Broncos. So in order for Peyton to sign that one-year deal or that one-day deal or whatever it was they were trying to say, he would have to have been released from the Broncos in order to, you know, act out this little play, this little production they wanted to put on. Peyton Manning doesn't seem to me to be like a make-believe sort of guy. Like, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that, well, I'm going to play dress-up and I'm going to dress up like a princess and then everyone will look at me. He doesn't, I don't know. Peyton doesn't seem like. So he didn't make a big scene, and he just retired, and then the media kind of drummed up this story to try to kind of make it, well, look, he really hates the Colts, and he's really big. No, he probably just didn't want to stir up a bunch of stuff. His rights are still owned by the Denver Broncos. He would have had to have been released in order to do that. Just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, the only real NFL free agent news over the past week was that after trying unsuccessfully to renegotiate offensive tackle Ryan Clady, it looks like the Denver Broncos instead went out and just signed former Seattle offensive tackle Russell Okung. Now, you might not care one bit about that. You might not be a Bronco fan. You might not really care why they went and got Okung or anything like that. And I completely understand if you aren't a Bronco fan. But here is what is interesting if you're just a sports fan. Russell Okung was representing himself in this negotiation with the Denver Broncos, or with any team, whoever the team was that wanted to sign him, he was representing himself. He didn't get an agent. Now, Okung is one of the best offensive tackles in the NFL when he is healthy. The problem for him, and the problem when he was with the Seattle Seahawks, is that he struggled to stay healthy. He's missed like a quarter of the games in each season. So the Broncos were worried that, you know, they sign him to a big deal, and then he ends up just sitting out the whole time. We don't want to waste that money and be on the hook for all that money. That might end up being, you know, a bit of a problem, right? So what they did was the Denver Broncos went and signed Russell Okung to a five-year, $53 million contract. Not bad. Not bad for a guy that's representing himself, right? Not bad for a guy who doesn't have an agent. 5 years, $53 million? Yeah, not really. See, here's the deal. The deal is loaded with incentives, and it's all hinged upon him passing physicals at various points in the season. Here's the downside of it for him. There is zero guaranteed money for Russell Okung. If he plays and plays well, yes, he can make that money. He can make a chunk of that five-year $53 million. If he gets hurt, the Denver Broncos can literally cut him and not pay him a dime. Hey, it's a great deal for the Broncos. I'm not going to lie. As a Bronco fan, that's a great deal for the Broncos. That is a horrible, horrible deal for the player. This is why players have agents. This is why players have agents, to represent you in these kind of situations where the team is, you know, putting all this stuff in and, oh, yeah, 53. Oh, yeah, that looks really good, $53 million. Well, yeah, unless we don't really feel like paying you, and then we won't pay you any. Now, the Broncos are now kind of looking like they might try to deal Ryan Clady. We'll see how that all plays out. I don't know if they can get anything for Clady. I don't know if they want to keep Clady or if they'll end up just cutting him, and I think what teams are going to do is instead of dealing for him, they'll just wait and see if the Broncos end up cutting him, and then maybe they can sign him for nothing without having to give up anything in some sort of a trade. We'll keep an eye on that. There is still no word on a Denver Broncos quarterback. Right now, they have Mark Sanchez, and they have Trevor Siemian, and that is it. But understand, some of these things are still kind of playing out. See, the San Francisco 49ers still have Colin Kaepernick on their roster. Now, as of April 1st, a roster bonus will kick in for him, which means if he is still a member of the San Francisco 49ers, as of April 1st, they're going to have to pay him a significant chunk of money. So prior to that, we may see the Niners start to lower their price tag a little bit and maybe try to deal Kaepernick a little more seriously. They've been kind of holding out for a second-round pick from the Broncos, possibly the Jets, or maybe the Cleveland Browns. I think that price tag is going to go lower the closer we get to April 1st. Because, hey, you got to try to deal this guy, right? All their posturing and all their, hey, we've got a really good deal here. I don't know if you've seen it, but we've got a really nice car here. We put on the you know, rust-proof undercoating, and we're going to give you a second pair of keys. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. It's a lemon. I'm not buying that thing. So everyone's kind of waiting around until we get closer to April 1st, and then we will see if anything is done with Colin Kaepernick. The NFL owners' meetings. They've been going on, I told you, in Boca Raton, Florida. And what this is a bunch of rich old white dudes hold up in Boca Raton, counting their money and trying to figure out exactly how can we make maybe even a little bit more money, because we'd really like to do that. Now, in these owners' meetings, teams can introduce new rules at these meetings. And then the owners will vote on them. You have to get 24 of 32 owners to agree. And then, you know, they'll pass them. Well, of course, obviously, being, you know, 32 different owners all with their own different agendas, very little gets done. But actually, this year, they have put in a couple new rules. I want to give you a couple of those rules that they have put in for the 2016 season. Now, right now, a couple of these rules are for 2016 only. Here's a couple rules, and here's a couple of problems that they're going to have with these rules. I know these are smart guys. I know these are highly intelligent guys putting in these rules. But the rules that they're putting in, a couple of them, yeah, they make some sense. A couple of them make some sense. I get it. And a couple of them are kind of stupid. And, well, here's a couple examples. So, for the 2016 season only, as of right now, NFL players will be subject to automatic ejection if they commit two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in the same game. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Sounds good on the surface. Hey, we're trying to get this whole sportsmanship thing going. We're trying to make sure that we don't have guys just playing dirty. You know, we saw the whole situation with Carolina Panthers earlier this year where there's a couple of fights, and should this guy have been ejected? Well, now if you get two unsportsman conduct penalties in the same game, boom, you're ejected. Here's the problem. Here's a couple of problems. For one, NFL refs don't want to do that. NFL refs, as much as sometimes we think the opposite, NFL refs don't really want to have that much of a saying in the competitive outcome of a game. That's why you see them so many times kind of look the other way in these situations. It's kind of like looking, I don't know, at like NBA refs. You know how sometimes a guy picks up his fifth foul and they don't want to give him the sixth, so he can like hack as much as he wants. They just kind of look the other way. They kind of are the same way in this. They're going to look the other way because they don't want to have that direct outcome on the game. Hey, if I kick out one of your best players, that's going to have a pretty direct outcome on the game. We don't want to eject anybody like that. And so there's a little bit of a problem. I don't think these guys are going to do that very often. Now, they've looked up and said, based on that rule, if we would have had that rule in over the past 3 years, I think it would have been two guys would have been ejected. Okay, great. I get that. Here's the problem. There's no instant replay on penalties like that. There's no instant replay on unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. So what if an NFL official sees kind of a scrum going and kind of a fight going, and it looked like Tom Brady might have been involved, so he goes ahead and ejects Tom Brady because he already had picked up, you know, an unsportsmanlike earlier in the game, and now he's gone. We can't go back and replay it. Hey, you had the wrong guy. You didn't get the right guy. That was actually an offensive lineman. It wasn't him. He got pushed into the pile. It really wasn't Tom Brady. Uh-oh. Gonna have some problems with that. Because those penalties aren't reviewable. I don't know if this is the best idea that they've thrown out there. Here's another rule that has been instituted for the 2016 season. The touchback rule is going to be after kickoffs is going to go automatically to the 25-yard line instead of the 20. They are trying to minimize the number of kicks or the number of kick returns. They don't want these guys smashing into each other again and again and again. Of course, they keep moving the kickoff up, which you might think helps. Okay, well, now they can really kick out of the back of the end zone. Yeah, except for that a lot of kickers don't do that. A lot of the kickers try to pop it up and land it about the one, so you're going to return it, and we can probably keep you inside the 20. I think you're going to see that with this, too. It moves out to the 25-yard line? Well, then I'm going to pop it up about 2-3 yards deep into the end zone and see if I can get you to return it, because I'll bet you I can keep you inside the 25-yard line. That's guaranteed yardage for the kickoff team. So some of these rules, like, they sound good, but they don't always necessarily work. And again, like I said, these are smart guys putting this in. These are businessmen. These are millionaires putting these rules in. But if I'm kicking off and I say, well, you can either have the ball at the 25 or I can pop it up, land it about the 1, and I can probably tackle you about the 19, guess which way I'm going to go? I'm going to pop that kickoff up. I'm not going to have that happen. Now, a couple other rules that they have put in. The 15-yard line is now permanent for all extra points. That was a one-year thing. They have now put that in permanent. Let's see. More misses. We've definitely had more misses this past year on extra points. More tries for two. Oh, we like that. We like that because, remember, on the extra point, we had a number of fans leaving, going to get another hot dog and another beer, so we can't have that. So let's have it, you know, they may back that up further in the future. I mean, we want you to stick right there because then we can sell our commercial time just a little bit better. So that's another one that's going in. Chop blocks have been banned completely. You know, a chop block, maybe that, you know, that gets thrown around a lot. Chop block is when you have one blocker blocking high and you bring in another guy and block low. Now, they had banned those on the edge of the play, but the interior line of scrimmage, it was still legal to chop block. So let's say you had an offensive guard blocking a defensive lineman, a running back could come in and chop his leg still. That was still legal. Understand the reason for the chop block. Because you might just look at the chop block. Everybody looks at the chop block and just is like, oh, that's such a dirty play. How could that ever have been legal? That's just such a dirty play. I understand, and I think they had to get rid of it because of the injury problems that it does present. But here's the reason for a chop block. It allows a smaller guy to block a bigger guy. That was the reason for the chop block. If I'm a running back, what in the world am I supposed to do against Ndamukong Suh when he comes running in? Well, I go down and cut his legs. Maybe he's engaged up top, but I go down and cut his legs. They've completely banned that now. I don't think it has much of an outcome on it. I don't think that many people do it that much anyway. So I understand that there are player safety things there, but that was the reason that chop blocking was still why it was even out there to begin with. You would think that would be a dirty play. No, so a smaller guy could block a bigger guy. The other rule they have put in, horse collar rules have now expanded to grabbing the nameplate on the back of the jersey. So it was, you had to be reaching into the shoulder pads. Remember, if you were reaching into the shoulder pads and you pulled the guy down, that whole tackle area, if you tackle somebody by the back of the top of their jersey there, it's really dangerous because your body comes down on their legs. And so what you were seeing broken legs, you were seeing broken ankles, you were seeing a number of injuries from that. And that's how why that is being banned. It's interesting. It's amazing how the NFL has really gotten real safety conscious right around that time after they got sued for a whole bunch of money for not being that safety conscious, right? I mean, because let's be real clear. None of this stuff was coming in. You can talk about safety, like, oh, yeah, we really care about players. We really want our players. They didn't care one ounce until they got sued. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, it probably is a pretty good idea to get rid of some of these rules that were, you know, ending guys' careers and you know, subjecting them to injuries really, really early in their careers. Now, one of the rules that didn't get passed, kind of an interesting rule, a rule that is not going to happen. That was thrown out there. It was thrown out there by the Kansas City Chiefs. They actually nominated a Peyton Manning rule. Do you remember against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs? You might remember this play. Peyton Manning slipped and he kind of fell down and then he got up and he completed a pass. Well, the Kansas City Chiefs wanted to institute a rule that said if a quarterback slips and falls down, he's down. He can't get up and throw a pass. Like, he's down. That's just, you know, the college rule. Your knee touched, you're down. And then the Kansas City Chiefs like stopped and probably maybe they heard themselves saying it, like talking out loud. And then they're like, wait a second. This could really come back and bite us. If Alex Smith falls down and then gets back up, we want him to be able to throw it. And so after a few days, Kansas City was like, you know what? Never mind. We don't really want that rule. Let's just withdraw that whole thing. But never mind. Good thinking, chefs. Nice job on that. Why'd you even throw that out there? Was that just Denver Bronco bitterness that got you to throw that out there? Because that's a little bit odd that that you would lob that out and then just withdraw it. Nah, never mind. Do over. Let's shift out of the NFL and switch over to the NBA. Now, with all the talk about March Madness and all the talk about NFL free agency and you know, a number of things that are going on in the sports world, this weekend you may have missed a really important game that took place on Saturday night. The San Antonio Spurs improved their record to 35-0 at home by beating the Golden State Warriors. You know, the loss drops the Warriors to 63-7. And that means, you know, there's only 12 games left, at least for the Warriors. There's 12 games left in the regular season. They have to win 9 of them to tie the 96 Bulls. They're going to have to win 10 of them to beat the 96 Bulls. And here's the thing about Golden State, and I give them, I guess, a little bit of credit for this. They aren't shying away from this record whatsoever. Like, they're all in on this record. When they talk to them and they ask them, hey, are you guys going for the record? Yep, we sure are. And they aren't backing away from it. But, you know, the game on Saturday night, I think it was a little bit more of a statement game that if you meet in the postseason, it's not just going to be the Warriors drilling the Spurs by 30 for 4 straight games. Because remember earlier in the season, they finally met for the first time. They hadn't met, you know, since last year. We hadn't really seen them play. And they play for the first time, and Golden State just hammers them. I mean, beat them by, I think, 30, and it could have been 50. But in this game, if Golden State blows them out again on Saturday night, I think we all look at this and go, yeah, I think we know how this is going to end if this goes in the postseason. But that's not how this went. The Spurs won 87-79, and they held Steph Curry to 14 points. Now, we all know Greg Popovich is the master of head games, the master of playing the mental games. I mean, he loves to tweak people. He loves to do different things that maybe are a little bit unorthodox, I guess. He had Tim Duncan come off the bench on Saturday night. And what he did was he countered Golden State's starting lineup, which was a little more small ball, with a, kind of a small lineup of his own. Duncan actually played just 8 minutes. But LaMarcus Aldridge was very good. Aldridge had 26. Kawhi Leonard had 18. Boris Diaw had 14. Popovich isn't quite done yet. I know everyone is jumping on, you know, what Golden State is doing, and what the Golden State run has been absolutely incredible. But the San Antonio Spurs aren't quite done. And I think they really want to get that one more championship for Tim. And I think Tim Duncan, obviously, he's always been that way. I think he is more than content to say, hey, I'll do whatever it takes. You need me to come off the bench against Golden State? I'm fine with that. You need me to not maybe play as much against Golden State? I'll do what I need to do. Tim Duncan doesn't care. He just wants to win. But this game, 79 points. Now, it was in San Antonio. Obviously, they had the home crowd going. And we're starting to see Golden State start to feel the season. They've been on a long road trip over the past week or so. We're starting to see those tired legs. And here's the problem. I told you before, they aren't shying away from this record. They're going after this record. That means no rest. That means they don't want to back off. That means they don't want to rest and get ready for the playoffs. And to be fair, they can't rest too much because San Antonio, for as great as Golden State has been, San Antonio's right behind them. You rest too much, you're going to lose home court advantage for the playoffs. So they can't rest much. All through the season, Greg Popovich has been resting his guys, and they're still just like 4 games behind the Warriors. This postseason, and like I said, we've got about, you know, 12 games left. Some teams 11 or 13, whatever it might be. This postseason is coming really, really quickly, and this postseason is going to be so much fun to watch because there are a number of storylines that are going to be taking place. I mean, you look over at the East. What are the Cavaliers doing? We're starting to see the Cavaliers, they always kind of have a soap opera about them, and LeBron James always just kind of has something going on with him. He's deleting following the Cavaliers on Twitter. I mean, it's always something silly. He's going down to Miami to train on a few days off instead of training with his teammates. He put this team together. We'll see. Miami looks like they're kind of starting to close the gap on Cleveland. Toronto is kind of right there. I still think the East is Cleveland's. I don't think there's, I think they'll waltz through the playoffs, but there are a couple of teams over there that if they can figure some things out, may test the Cleveland Cavaliers. Going to be interesting to see what they do. And then on the West side, yes, there's probably only two or three teams that can really win it. But you know what I'm really rooting for in the NBA playoffs? And maybe this is just me. I want to see the Los Angeles Clippers and the Memphis Grizzlies play each other. I don't care how. I don't care what round. I just want to see those two teams play each other. Because I have a feeling we're going to have like a full-scale rumble if they play each other. Matt Barnes? Really? I love that. There's some really good storyline. Oklahoma City, what are they going to do? Kevin Durant going to finally, you know, get some wins, get some postseason wins? He's been to the finals. Didn't show very well in the finals. But he's been there. At what point does that pressure start where we start saying, hey, man, yeah, Durant's a great player, but man, he's kind of Dominique Wilkins-like. He just never wins. aren't those conversations coming? The NBA postseason is coming quickly, and it is going to be very, very entertaining to see exactly what happens. Got a few teams over there. Clippers. Obviously, the Warriors and the Spurs. The Thunder. Where do they end up? Team like the Mavericks. Someone who kind of sleeping on them all year, but they're not bad. Going to be interesting to keep an eye on the NBA postseason. We will get you ready for that as usual. Hey, we've got to jump over to March Madness. And before we get to the actual, you know, tournament, we've got a little bit of college hoops news that I want to talk about. I have some breaking news for you. I have some breaking news. This is going to shock you. I'm telling you right now, you might want to sit down for this, okay? Take a breath, sit down for this. Apparently, LSU's Ben Simmons is going to enter the 2016 NBA draft. Woo! There's a shocker. Who broke that news? I mean, is there like a reporter out there? Is there like a local guy out there that's like, hey guys, I've got this on pretty good authority. Like a friend of a cousin who used to date someone close to Ben Simmons says he's going to enter the draft. Like, do you have to get a second source on that one? I mean, let's be honest. We knew Ben Simmons was declaring back when he stopped going to class, you know, in high school. We knew he wasn't going to be in college very long. College clearly wasn't for him. He wasn't going to be weighed down by all them books and learning and stuff. Now, we saw some flaws in Ben Simmons' game, especially coming down the stretch late in the season. Obviously, LSU, whatever's going on down there, that was a complete and utter disaster. But we saw some flaws in Ben Simmons' game. Do you realize he's not a great shooter? That doesn't worry me as much as it might some people, because once you get to the NBA, they'll make you become a better shooter, especially if you're a guy you know, that works hard. If you're the guy that wants to go out and be great, he'll get better as a shooter. Do you realize he took something like 19 jump shots for the season? 19 jumpers. Not only is he not a great shooter, he doesn't shoot the ball that much, and I'll guarantee you, at the next level, they'll dare him to. They'll sag on him. No, you're not coming in here. Sit out there and prove you can shoot a little bit. So we saw some flaws in his game. He doesn't always play that hard. Obviously, take a look at that SEC tournament. I think we can safely assume he doesn't always play hard. He's got a huge upside to his game. So do you think teams are going to drop him from that number one spot? We saw some great play in the tournament. We've seen some players step up and some different guys look really, really good. Do you think anyone's going to supplant him? Probably not. Because here's the thing. Ben Simmons is only 19 years old. I think he's still going to go number one. And unfortunately for him, he's probably going to still go number one, because that probably means he's going to Philadelphia, which might be the worst place he could possibly go. Like, as bad as the Lakers are, he would be way better off going to Los Angeles Lakers. He's probably going to end up in Philadelphia. Here's the problem for teams that are out there. Yes, they might look at other guys and say, this guy might look better right now, but they don't want to be the guy that passes on Ben Simmons. when you think of the Portland Trailblazers, and I bring up the name Michael Jordan, everyone just slaps their forehead. Oh, how did you pass up on Jordan? Nobody wants to do that. So if it's Philly or if it's LA or whoever it might be that gets that number one spot out of the goofy lottery ping pong balls that we get, they're still going to take Ben Simmons number one. And he still has a huge, he's 19 years old. He still has a huge upside. But there are certain things about him that I saw that gave me a little bit of pause. Gave me a little bit of concern. A couple of red flags about him that if I was taking him, might concern me. Going to keep an eye on Ben Simmons because here's the thing. So you know what actually helps him? And when I say this, you might initially say, "Yo, you're crazy. What are you talking about?" You know what actually helps him? The fact that he didn't play in the tournament. Because everyone's going to forget how bad he looked back in the SEC tournament. Everyone's going to forget down the stretch for LSU how horrible he looked. And he's going to have some time for everyone to kind of forget those things. And by the time the draft comes and they see him at the combine and they see him in personal workouts and they see him oh man, he's really, really good. And they'll forget those. Had he got into the tournament, had he actually, you know, made it in, and then we saw them like get run out of the gym by like, I don't know, UNC Wilmington or something, then everyone would be sitting there going, oh man, that was really bad. He's got some problems. He's got some flaws in his game. But because he didn't make the tournament, it's actually going to help him a little bit. Because by the time we get through combines and workouts and everything, we're going to go, oh yeah, he's really, really good. And they're going to still take him number one. It's coming. It's coming. He'll be the top pick in the NBA draft. How are your brackets looking? Are they busted? Let me tell you how goofy of a year it is. And I told you I thought it would be a goofy year. I thought it would be a wide open year. My bracket's okay. I've still got three out of my four. I lost Xavier on, what was that, Saturday night, Sunday night. I lost Xavier. That was the only one. My 11-year-old daughter still has all four of her final four teams. So that kind of tells you it's that kind of year. It's if you're in the office pool, yeah, I don't know who's winning it. If you know a lot about sports, it's probably not you. Because the less you know, I think the better off you are in a year like this. But, you know, there's been a lot of upsets and some big surprises. But here's the thing I want you to think about. All four number one seeds are still in it. And in fact, the top seeds, as wide open as it's been, the top seeds haven't done too bad. Yes, there's been a couple drop-off. There's been a couple been knocked out. But I want you to think about this. Of the final 16 teams in the Sweet 16, 12 of those were seeded fifth or higher. You know, within their region. They were either a 1 through a 5. That's still the top seeds are still playing. Like, we got rid of all the lower seeds. You look at, the South. The South bracket is, the seeds are 1, 2, 3, and 5. You look at the West, the seeds are 1, 2, 3, 4. So, I mean, for as crazy as it's been, for the upsets that we've seen, for the buzzer beaters and things that we've seen, the top teams are still kind of in it. There's been a couple that have dropped. We have seen some crazy, crazy finishes. You think about some of just the insane finishes that we've seen this year in the tournament. St. Joseph's beats Cincinnati after a buzzer beater gets waved off. Since he thinks they win it, they wave it off. They didn't win it. It's given back to St. Joseph's. Crazy. By the way, and I don't know if you've seen this. Phil Martelli, head coach at St. Joseph's, phenomenal coach. Just one of the best coaches in college basketball. Great coach. You know, that Philadelphia area with St. Joseph's and Villanova and Temple and all those great schools up in Philadelphia area, Phil Martelli is one of the best coaches in college basketball. Good guy, cares about his kids, coaches them up. Gets them ready. They run some really, really good stuff. Always, always tough. But have you seen the hairdo? Because he's got kind of the balding thing going around the back, you know, over the ears. But then it's all just the hairs on the back of the neck. It's like all of it's gone on the head, and then it's just down the back of the neck, like a mud flap on the back of his. He's got like a balding mullet. I don't even know what to call it. Cut all the, just go bald. You're bald anyway. Just shave the rest of that off. Not a good look. Couple other crazy finishes we saw. Providence beats Southern Cal. And the only reason they beat Southern Cal is because the Trojans missed more free throws than like Steve Sarkisian on a three-day bender. I mean, the game is available. Just knock down your free throws. Southern Cal, you're going to win. You're going to advance. You've got the lead. You've got the time on your side. Just knock down some free. They couldn't make a free throw to save their life. Providence somehow sneaks by Southern Cal. Stephen F. Austin knocks off West Virginia, and they almost got Notre Dame. Now, we kind of talked about Stephen F. Austin a little bit last week. They're pressing, they're trapping, they're all over the floor. They play extremely hard. But here was kind of the surprising part about Stephen F. Austin in the tournament. They were doing all this stuff with a ginger named Thomas Walkup. That is, what's the, fill in the blank. What do you want to say for the white guy? He's gritty, he's gutty. He's like a really hard worker. He's surprisingly athletic. Whatever you want to say, Thomas Walkup was all those things. Stephen F. Austin was really, really a fun team to watch in the tournament. Knocked off West Virginia, and then, like I said, almost got Notre Dame too behind a ginger. That's why it's madness. That's why it's March Madness right there. Wisconsin, like I said, Wisconsin beat number two seed Xavier on, let's be honest, 2 3-point shots that probably had no business going in. I will say this about those shots from Koenig for Wisconsin. If you look at both the shots, he hits the top of the key jumper, and he hits that fadeaway in the corner, kind of a fadeaway in the corner, to win it against Xavier in that game. Two great shots by Koenig. Here's the thing I want you to notice if you watch those shots again, though. Watch where he lands on both of those shots. The first one, he kind of does the step back three, the Steph Curry. He said he's channeling his Steph Curry on those two shots. He doesn't fade. He doesn't land back behind where he went up. He comes down about in the same spot. The shot, even from the corner, as much of a kind of a running to the corner fadeaway, if you look at where he lands, he actually comes down pretty close. If you're a jump shooter, And you're going, way off of where, when I jump, I land in a completely different area code, I've got problems. And the reason that he was able to knock down both of those shots is he got his feet around and he was pretty square. He might have moved just a little bit, but he actually went pretty straight up. That's why he knocked both of those shots down. Great shooting. If you have a young person watching someone shoot, notice where his feet came down, because that was the key for why Wisconsin was able to hit those two shots. It's crazy. Going into the tournament, the Vegas favorite was Michigan State. The Spartans look like the best team going. They've got one of the best players in Denzel Valentine. They get knocked off by a Middle Tennessee State team. I watched that game, and I don't know if Middle Tennessee State is that good, but it seemed like they just played a perfect game that day. Because the next round against Syracuse, they crashed back down to earth, and we all went, maybe they weren't that great. When they beat Michigan State, you're like, maybe this team is special. No, they just like had the best day of their life against Michigan State. And it wasn't that Michigan State played horrible. They gave up some transition buckets and some things late, but I think that was kind of panic mode when they got in those late situations and they went, wow, are we really losing to a number 15 seed? I think that started, but throughout the game, they shot pretty well. They were battling. They faced a team that had their best day of their life. And in this tournament, that is all that matters. In a single elimination tournament, you don't have to be great. You just have to be great for a game or two. And you might sneak past some people. Let's take a look at some of the conferences and what the conferences are doing so far in the tournament. The ACC looks like the best conference so far. The ACC in the tournament so far is 12-1. The only loss for the ACC, Pitt. Pitt went down to Wisconsin in that first round, a 10-7 matchup. And that's the only loss that the ACC has had. Let's see. Big Ten is 8-4. We talked a little bit last week about how the Big Ten would be. Didn't look like the committee respected the Big Ten very much. They're 8-4. You lost a couple of, obviously, Michigan State. You lost a couple teams like that, Michigan and things like that. But Big Ten has done solid. Big 12 is a little bit disappointing. You know, we had talked throughout the year, and it was kind of looking like the Big 12 might be top to bottom the best conference, and they still might be. They still might, top to bottom, they might be the best conference in the country. But 6-4, that's a little bit disappointing. Something to think about with the Big 12. West Virginia, Texas, Baylor, and Texas Tech all went out in the first round. they didn't even get to the 32. That's a little bit disappointing. But hey, let's be honest. The worst showing by a conference so far in this tournament is the Pac-12. And it is not. It's really not that close. They got, what, 7 teams in, I think? Pac-12 is 3-6. Remember the committee really liked the Pac-12? I mean, they did put 7 teams in there. They did give Oregon a #1 seed. So far, Colorado, Cal, Arizona, Oregon State, and Southern Cal all out in the first round. Utah won 1 game, got to the second round, and then Oregon is the only team from the Pac-12 that is left. Not a great tournament for the Pac-12. They're struggling. And maybe it's matchups, maybe it's just the way it went down, or maybe the Pac-12 was just a little bit overrated. I know everyone was really big on it. The one to me that hurts the most out of that is Arizona. Arizona just that's painful. How they went out that early, go out to Wichita State, a team that was banged up, a team that was tired. Yes, Wichita State is gritty and tough, and they find ways to win, but Arizona, you should have had more than that. They were sweating like Sean Miller was in his shirt. Let's take a look at the games. Let's take a look at the games coming up. Games coming up, you know, I've told you before, I love the Sweet 16. The Sweet 16 is like probably my favorite. I love the first 2 days. The Thursday and Friday, because you just have games all day. But some of those games are snoozers. I mean, some of those games aren't that great. Some of those games are a little bit boring. You get the blowouts. You get games that maybe you look at a team and say, yeah, you probably didn't belong. You get some of those 1-16 matchups. Not as much fun. But by the Sweet 16, you've weeded most of those teams out. And so the Sweet 16, you still have a lot of games. You still have 4 games a day. But now you have kind of scraped off, you know, some of the nonsense. And now you have some of the best playing some of the best. And the Sweet 16 is really one of the funnest rounds of this tournament. You get rid of some of those teams that didn't belong. You know, like, I don't know, Michigan State. No, I'm just kidding, Spartan fan. You belonged. You just didn't belong on the floor that day against Middle Tennessee. Let's take a look at some of the games here in the Sweet 16. And I'll even give you who I think is going to win it. You know, some of the brackets that are out there, you might fill in your online bracket. Some of those brackets kind of let you start over at the Sweet 16 if you're looking to re. I don't usually do this, and don't blame me if you lose money. I'm not on the hook for your mistakes if you actually listen to what I say. But let me take a look at some of these games. First game on Thursday is going to be Miami versus Villanova. I love what Villanova does, and I love what Jay Wright has gotten out of this team. They are just shooting the lights out. You know, Nova plays kind of small ball. They play with a bunch of guards. And they sometimes can struggle to rebound a little bit, but they play with a bunch of guards. They force you to kind of find them. They force you to kind of try to match up with them and their quickness. And they are absolutely shooting the lights out so far in this tournament. They're shooting close to like 70%. Here's the problem. You won't shoot that well against Miami. Jim Larrañaga's team, it's not that they do anything crazy. It's just that they are so fundamentally sound. They're so tough. They can shut you down. And their point guard, take a look at Miami's point guard. If you want an entertaining player to watch, Angel Rodriguez, you look at him and you think he's like the little fat kid that you're like, oh, I got him at the rec center. And then he just torches you and all your teammates are like, dude, I thought you had him. He doesn't look like a player. He is a phenomenal little point guard. He can shoot it. He can dish and distribute. And he's way quicker because I see he kind of has a chubby look about him, but he's way quicker than people think he is. Can get into the paint and just be a pain. I think Miami is going to give Villanova a fit. I would take Miami in that game. I like the way that they're playing. And I think they're just tough. I think they've figured some things out defensively. Larrañaga is always about the defense. If you remember him back at George Mason, the way that team played defense, this Miami team, and they're so long, they have length, they have size. I think they are just a tough matchup for Villanova, which is too bad because I really like what Jay Wright's done with Villanova. But I think Miami's going to get them. Texas A&M versus Oklahoma. If you haven't seen Oklahoma and Buddy Hield play yet, you are missing out. Buddy Hield flat out looks like a man playing against boys. And the thing about him, I guess you could compare him a little bit to maybe like a Dwayne Wade. But the problem is that Buddy Hield can shoot it. And Wade kind of developed his shot as he got into the NBA, but Hield can shoot it now. I mean, he's deadly from outside. He can blow past you. He really does look like a man playing against boys. The thing about A&M, Texas A&M has pretty good guards. They've got pretty good bigs. They've got a lot of size. They can play slow. They can play fast. They can play any tempo you want to play. Texas A&M is fine doing whatever you want to do. That's a tough one. I'm going to go Lon Kruger and Buddy Hield. I'm going to take Oklahoma in this, but that's a tough one for me because I can see this one going either way. I'll take Oklahoma, but A&M, I like the way they match up with them. Maryland versus Kansas. Now, if you don't know this, Maryland coach Mark Turgeon is a Kansas guy. I mean, that's where he played. I believe that's where he started his coaching career. He's a Kansas guy. But here's the thing, and I love Maryland's point guard, Melo Trimble. Phenomenal player. Can do so many different things. But sometimes it looks like he tries to do too much. And when he does, he can start getting himself into trouble. And against a team like Kansas, who has senior leadership, who has toughness, who can play some defense, Melo Trimble might try to do too much and get himself in some pretty serious trouble. He's got to let the game come to him. He's got to get the ball to the right people at the right time, and don't force bad shots and bad passes. If you do, Kansas will eat them up, and it won't be a close game. I'll take Kansas in that game. I just think they have too much. The final game on Thursday will be Duke versus Oregon. Now, I don't know if you've watched either one of these teams. Neither one of them is going to impress you with their defense. I don't know who's going to get a stop in this game, but if whoever gets a stop is going to win. They can both score. The difference in this game, I think Oregon probably has a little more depth. Duke is going to need to get some contributions from their bench. They're going to need like the ninth Plumlee or whatever he is to step up and knock down a few shots. And if he does, they'll be right in it. If not, I think Oregon just has a little bit more depth than what Duke has. We roll over to the Friday games. That's a good Thursday day. I mean, that's good matchups there. Roll over to Friday. Iowa State versus Virginia is the first game on Friday. Iowa State can get up and down the floor. If you've seen them, they like to push the ball up the floor. They love to push tempo. They get a lot of shots up. Here's the problem. Virginia's going to punch them right in their mouth. And the thing about Virginia is it's not just that they're going to do that defensively. As much as they will get after him defensively. It's on offense too. You know, they run that blocker mover stuff on offense where they come down, they're going to screen you, they're going to rescreen you, they're going to hit you with screens and hit you with screens and hit you with screens. And what they're going to do with a team, I think, like Iowa State, is they're going to wear out those legs. Those legs that you need to shoot, they're going to wear them out at both the defensive end and the offensive end as they run you through screen after screen, screen you, and then we rescreen you, and then we screen the screener, and they're just going to beat them up physically. I think Virginia can get by Iowa State. I think that's a good matchup for them. Those are the kind of teams that a team like Virginia does like. Now, the only issue will be if they have some breakdowns on defense and then they are forced to try to outscore Iowa State. But if they can limit what, you know, if their defense is up to what it normally is, they're going to be just fine. Wisconsin versus Notre Dame. Let's be honest. Both of these teams are overachieving. I mean, Wisconsin gets to the Sweet 16 on two prayers, you know, right before the buzzer. Notre Dame has kind of, you know, slipped by and they're playing just good enough. You know, Wisconsin has been through a lot of things. They had the coaching change with Bo Ryan going out. They hired the new coach as an intern, and then they finally signed him and said he's the permanent coach. They got away from the old, you know, Wisconsin offense that they've run for years, and now they've gone back to it. You know, they've just been a lot of change for Wisconsin, but they're playing their best basketball right now. The problem for them, I think Notre Dame might just have a little too much athleticism. I really like point guard Demetrius Jackson for Notre Dame. He's just tough. He just gets the job done. He gets the ball to the right people at the right time. They've got some good shooters, and they are a little bit more athletic with Wisconsin. Wisconsin just doesn't make many mistakes. They don't turn the ball over. This should be a very competitive game. It might be an ugly game, though. I'll tell you right now. It might be ugly, but it should be competitive. I'll take Notre Dame. I didn't like the way they were playing when we came into the tournament, but they're kind of starting to figure some things out, and they're showing some things. Gonzaga versus Syracuse. Is anyone in the country, and this is bizarre to say, remember I told you last week, a team that we all say shouldn't have got there always surprises us and wins a few games? There's Syracuse. Is anyone playing better than Syracuse? In the country, is anyone playing better than Syracuse right now? I don't know if they are. But here's the thing about Gonzaga. They're tough. they have a toughness about them that I'm a little bit shocked to see. They're really good defensively. Here's what Syracuse does. They can shoot the three like crazy, and obviously they're going to play that 2-3 zone. Gonzaga might be the perfect team to beat Syracuse because they defend the three as well as anyone in the country. They're one of the best teams defensively against the three-point shot. And they can shoot a little bit, yeah. They can penetrate a little bit, yeah. But they can attack the offensive glass, which against a zone many times is the key to beating them. I'm going to take Gonzaga in that. And I like the toughness that Gonzaga has shown. I don't know if they're as talented as they have been in years past, but they're a little more scrappy than anyone else. Final game of the night on Friday night. Final game of Sweet 16, Indiana versus North Carolina. Doesn't this feel like it should be like a championship game? There's no way we should already be squaring these two teams off in the 16. Indiana, North Carolina, that might be a barn burner. That might be a great, great game. Marcus Page and Bryce Johnson caused so many problems. I'm impressed with the toughness that Indiana shows, but what Indiana's going to have to do, they're going to have to shoot it well from outside. Because if you don't, Carolina is just too athletic inside. You're going to have to get some shots to fall outside so that you can attack them inside a little bit. Tar Heel defense is pretty good. And surprisingly, because this wasn't the team I thought it was, Tar Heels are showing a little bit of toughness. They're showing a little bit of resolve, and I kind of like that. Sweet 16 is Thursday and Friday. Elite 8 is Saturday and Sunday. Should have some great matchups coming off the winners of these games. By Sunday night, the Final Four will be set, and we will get you ready for that this next week. Hey, as we do every week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, on Sunday, we saw Texas A&M pull off the biggest last-minute comeback in NCAA history. Texas A&M was down 12 points with 44 seconds to play. 44 seconds to play. In those 44 seconds, Northern Iowa turns the ball over four times versus pressure. And there's so many mistakes. There's so many mistakes. And the worst part about it, and it's funny because, you know, you listen to a lot of people and they say, here's the mistake they made. They didn't know how to handle the pressure. They didn't know how to run their press breaker. One of the problems for Northern Iowa was they didn't have any timeouts. That hurt them. I Ben Jacobson would have loved to have taken a timeout. He would have loved to have, you know, kind of drawn something up, maybe get some screen away and seal and get the ball in, to a free throw shooter or that kind of thing. They didn't have that option. But can I tell you what the biggest mistake that Northern Iowa made? And it might not be what you think it is. Yes, they did a poor job of changing speed and changing direction as they're trying to get open. You saw them a number of times just kind of running alongside their defender back and forth. You're not getting open that way. You've got to change speed. You've got to change direction. You've got to get some movement. The biggest mistake that Northern Iowa made, and the reason that they gave away that 12-point lead with 44 seconds, was because, and I say this because, if you have a young person that plays basketball, they need to keep this in mind. Tell them this. The biggest mistake you can make in that situation is those live ball turnovers. And let me explain what I mean. They inbound the ball into the corner. We all know it shouldn't go into the corner. We all know that is not the place. Now you're being defended by two defenders and a baseline and a sideline, and you're completely trapped and you're in serious trouble. As big of a mistake as that is, though, that's not what killed them. What killed them was then they forced a pass that basically went right to A&M for a layup or a three-pointer or whatever it might be. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. What if it gets inbounded to the corner and the kid has it and he knows he's in trouble and so he just holds it and holds it and holds it and holds it and you get the 5-second count? Okay. You get the 5-second count. It's a turnover. You get your defense back. Everyone gets set up and then we play it out and we can probably make you take a few extra seconds. Players are so afraid of that 5-second count, they would rather assist you on a layup than they would just take the 5-second count. The 5-second count is not the worst thing to ever happen. Who cares? At least we get back and play defense. But what I can't do is I can't throw it directly to you as you cut in for a layup and give you automatic points. Those live ball turnovers killed Northern Iowa. Just take the 5-second count. It's okay. Yes, we'll turn it over, but we'll get our defense back and we'll get ready to play. Now, with that game in mind, the biggest, you know, last minute comeback ever. We thought we would count down the previous top five last minute comebacks in history. And there are some crazy games on here. You can probably YouTube a few of them. Some of them, they're not all tournament games. You can probably YouTube a few of these games, though. It, really, truly insane, insane games. So today, our Daily Dose top five, the top five last minute comebacks in NCAA history before this game on Sunday. Number five on our list, you got to go back to 1974. Now, this one you can find on YouTube. Duke led North Carolina by 8 points with just 17 seconds left to play. 17 seconds? I mean, everyone was talking about, well, it's been fun, and it looks like Duke's going to pull off the upset, and this game's over. Duke or Carolina got the ball. Bobby Jones was fouled. He hits two free throws. And on the inbound, Walter Davis gets a steal and feeds it inside for a quick layup. Well, you cut it really, really quick right there. Now it's down to four. Duke can't get the ball inbounded. Bobby Jones gets it and steals it, and we get another layup. Duke misses a free throw. UNC throws a half-court pass to Walter Davis, and he pulls up and hits a pretty long jumper. I don't know if it would have been a three-pointer in today's game. It would have been pretty close. Goes to overtime, and you just know if these games go to overtime, all the momentum is with the team that just came back. North Carolina ends up winning in OT. Down eight with 17 seconds. Number four on our list, 1993. University of New Mexico had a 9-point lead on New Mexico State with 55 seconds left. The problem is New Mexico just kept turning it over, And New Mexico State gets hot. They hit 3 three-pointers in the final 40 seconds. Keith Johnson finished with 26 for New Mexico State. Aggies would end up winning in two overtimes, not just one. Number three on our list, greatest last-minute comebacks. In 2009, Houston was up 10 on Arizona with 48 seconds left. Now, here's the thing about all these comebacks. All these comebacks require something. You either have to have a bunch of turnovers. We saw that with the Northern Iowa A&M game. You have to have some missed free throws. Actually, Northern Iowa didn't miss any free throws. I think they went 10 for 10 down the stretch. And sometimes you just got to have some crazy, stupid things happen. And that's what happened in this 2009 game with Houston and Arizona. Houston's Aubrey Coleman charges in to chase Budinger. And then he was mad about the foul call, and he stomped on Budinger's face. That kind of fired up Arizona, and Arizona kind of gets warmed up. Down the stretch, in 48 seconds, Nick Wise, Zane Johnson, and Jordan Hill, of course, who's now with the Lakers, chip in with some huge shots late. Houston just couldn't make free throws. Down the stretch, they just missed free throw after free throw after free throw. Arizona ties it up, goes into overtime, and wins it in overtime. Down 10, less than a minute. Number two on our list. Another one, you can go on YouTube and check this one out. 2001, Maryland led Duke 90-80, 55 seconds left. Back at Duke, they call this the Miracle Minute. And when you watch this, it's such a crazy game. They're up by 10, game is over. The announcers are kind of talking about, you know, what a great win by Maryland and what a great job they've done. Jason Williams hits a layup. Then he gets the steal. And he hits a three. So they cut it to five, boom, in like 7 seconds. It's really fast. Maryland, of course, like I said, they missed two free throws. Chris Duhon gets the rebound, comes down, hits another three. They cut it from 10 to 2 in 15 seconds. Maryland turns it over again. Mike Dunleavy misses a three, but Nate James gets fouled on the putback. He hits them both. They go to overtime. Duke wins in overtime after being down 10 with 55 seconds left in the game. Our final game. And the funny part about this final game, our number one game, it's not a great game. It's not an important game, but it's just a crazy game. Our number one game up until this last weekend, the number one comeback in the last minute was back in 2005. San Diego State led UNLV by 11 with 59 seconds left. UNLV hit five three-pointers in the final minute, three of them by a player named Curtis Terry. San Diego State missed a few free throws, turned it over a few times, and, you know, it was just a perfect storm. Everything, you know, just like on Sunday, Northern Iowa and A&M, if you make any of about five or six plays, you still find a way to win. But when that snowball gets rolling, it's really hard to stop. UNLV comes back and beats San Diego State in overtime, down 11 with less than a minute. You never know what's going to happen in March Madness. You never know what's going to happen in college basketball. That's just, once that snowball gets rolling, it's kind of hard to get it stopped. Hey, next week on the show, we will take a look at the Final Four and who might be playing in that NCAA championship game. Take a look back at the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Plus, like I said earlier, we begin to look toward the NBA playoffs, and the NFL draft is coming very, very soon. And as usual, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You never know where that's going to go. You got to stick around for that. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to iTunes or wherever it is that you download the podcast. Give us a quick rating and a review. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight.
Small businesses. Direct Line guaranteed to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.